Our final case of the day is Eaton against J.H. Findorff and Son. Mr. Salton.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Salton, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is William Salton, and I represent the appellant Deborah Eaton in this action. In 2011 and 2012, Ms. Eaton was an apprentice with the International Union of Operating Engineers in Milwaukee. She was assigned to a job site working at J.H. Findorff & Son, Inc. in Milwaukee at a project that was called the Modern. During her very first assignment as a telehandler, Ms. Eaton was terminated after and on her very first day. The union filed a grievance during that time, and the grievance resulted in Ms. Eaton being permitted to work a skip hoist during the remainder of the project, at least that portion of the project. In
Mr. Salton, I'm going to start you off. You don't have a lot of time. What is Ms. Eaton's best evidence that Sismakowski knew that her 2012 complaint was based on discrimination? Can an inference of knowledge overcome testimony specifically denying that knowledge? What is implausible about his testimony that he believed it was simply a union grievance?
Yes, Your Honor. I would point to the testimony in our reply brief from Mr. Simkowski, where he indicates that he was aware that in 2012, Ms. Eaton had complained about being laid off from the skip hoist. That was the subject of her 2012 charge of discrimination with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. He also indicated that he got that knowledge from either Mark Schneider or Sonny Femal. Sonny Femal is described by Mr. Schneider and others as Findorff's discrimination compliance officer. Findorff on appeal and below focuses like a laser on whether or not he was aware that an actual complaint was filed with an administrative agency, as opposed to whether he was generally aware that the subject matter of the complaint was based on sex discrimination.
But does the record tell us, for instance, who at Findorff investigated and responded to the 2012 charge of discrimination? In other words, simply saying that the company was aware, it doesn't tell us about the knowledge of the decision makers.
Yes, the best evidence in the record, Your Honor, comes from Mr. Schneider, who indicates that Sonny Femal investigates discrimination complaints, and those complaints would generally come to him as the general superintendent on projects. We know that Findorff's attorney submitted the position statement to the EEOC charge, not Ms. Femal or Mr. Simkowski. But we submit that, unlike the cases that are cited by J.H. Findorff in its appeal brief, the adverse decisions that we're complaining about in this case all occurred after J.H. Findorff responded to the complaints of discrimination.
Well, I actually had a question very much like the ones Judge Rovner has asked. Looking at the 2012 grievance, it seems obvious to me that people can complain about all sorts of things. They can complain about job assignments. They can complain about, you know, boorish coworkers. They can complain about sex discrimination. They can complain about hours of work. I was on this shift or that shift. I don't know why we jump from the fact that a grievance was filed all the way over to the fact that not only it was a sex discrimination grievance, but that Simkowski knew that. Because if he didn't know it, then we jump ahead to 2018. He's the only person who even conceivably could have known it, because the others didn't in 2018, and we're left with nothing.
Well, Your Honor, I want to be clear that Ms. Eaton did not file a union grievance in 2012. She filed a charge of discrimination with the EEOC. Mr. Simkowski describes that as a grievance. Certainly, Ms. Eaton could have filed a grievance with the union alleging sex discrimination. But merely because Mr. Simkowski in a deposition disclaims and denies knowing the subject matter, that is, that it's a sex discrimination complaint, doesn't mean that a reasonable jury could not so conclude. It is clear from his testimony that he's aware that the complaint occurred in 2012, that it relates to the layoff from the Skip Boys, which is the exact subject matter of the EEOC charge. And in order to respond to that charge fairly, one would have to speak with Mr. Simkowski, the person who made the layoff decision. I acknowledge that I don't have an admission in this case, but I don't think that that's necessary, given the events that we're complaining about are subsequent to the response to the charge of discrimination. I'd also like to point out that Ms. Eaton's appeal doesn't hinge solely on Mr. Simkowski. Mr. Schneider, we also submit that Mr. Schneider was aware of that complaint based on his similar testimony related to Sonny Femal. Generally, he'd be the person who would be spoken with relating to discrimination complaints, and specifically being aware that Ms. Eaton had in fact complained about being laid off from a Skip Boys, and describing conversations with Ms. Eaton about the layoffs in 2012. But there's no question that Mr. Simkowski is the impetus behind denying and scuttling future job opportunities at Findorf for Ms. Eaton. And with the little bit of time I have left in my opening argument, I'd just like to emphasize here that as it relates to the 2018 job opportunity, that's a guaranteed job opportunity under the union contract. They don't select who's going to be operating the Skip Boys. They go to the union. The union identifies based on seniority and other factors who is entitled to that job. And there was nothing that prohibited her from that job until that 2017 conversation with Mr. Simkowski, between Mr. Simkowski and Ms. Garney. And that's important because unlike the cases that are cited by J.H. Findorf in its brief, there's no weighing of qualifications in this case. And I think that that is really important and central to her claim. If there aren't any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Sultan. Mr. Gentry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Michael Gentry. I'm here on behalf of J.H. Findorf & Son, Incorporated. I'd like to begin by responding to the central discussion that Mr. Sultan had with Your Honors this morning. There simply is no evidence from which a reasonable fact finder could determine that Mr. Simkowski was aware that Ms. Eaton had actually filed a 2012 EEOC complaint in January 2012. When asked specifically by Mr. Sultan in his deposition whether he knew about the charge, he denied the knowledge. And also omitted by Mr. Sultan in his opening argument was that Mr. Simkowski also explicitly denied ever knowing that Ms. Eaton had ever alleged that her layoff in 2012 was related to her sex in any way. So we don't believe that there's any evidence in the record from which a jury could determine that. Pertaining to the position statement from the company that was filed in the case in 2012, that was completed by a lawyer who was not myself, but it is in the record. It's at 16-7. It does not mention Mr. Simkowski, does not mention Mr. Schneider whatsoever. So there's simply no ability for an inference to be made that either of them was consulted regarding the company's response. And furthermore, even if they were consulted, there's certainly no evidence in the record that that they were ever informed that the charge had been filed. For instance, they could have just provided.
Well, I would assume that a competent investigator would necessarily reveal the nature of the charge to the supervisor under investigation. Why isn't that sufficient to dispute Szymanski's denial of the nature of the charge? I mean, what company would answer a discrimination complaint without asking the person who made the decision whether his decision was based on sex.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, there's no evidence from Ms. Sunny Famal at all in the record. No discovery was taken of her at all. Moreover, it certainly is plausible that the company was intentionally trying to keep Mr. Simkowski from being aware of the 2012 EEOC complaint, considering the fact that he was still working with Deborah Eaton for several months thereafter. In fact, she continued to work 7 months after filing her EEOC complaint with the company until the position was eliminated. And there's no argument by Ms. Eaton that the elimination of her position was in any way related to her sex. Mr. Sultan discussed also that there was some type of guarantee regarding the 2018 job assignment. I'll just note for the record that there is no evidence that she ever filed, that Ms. Eaton ever filed a union grievance about that. So I'm not sure where that's coming from exactly. First of all, Your Honors, just briefly with regard to this 2017 allegation, Ms. Eaton applied for a job, submitted a job application. According to her, she wasn't sure there was a job. She did so just in case. This court's jurisprudence indicates that without a job to attain, there's simply no adverse action to support her failure to hire case. There were two other individuals involved in the decision to not hire Ms. Eaton in 2018, besides just Mr. Schneider and Mr. Simkowski. They were Kim Norton, the field operations specialist that actually sent the letter to the union, and Sam Garney, who was an administrative worker for the company, who received the initial phone call from the union indicating that Ms. Eaton was the one who was going to be sent. Ms. Eaton does not contend that either of them knew about her 2012 EEOC charge at all. And that's important because, again, Ms. Norton was the one who sent the letter informing the union not to send Ms. Eaton to the job site. And there's simply no evidence in the record also that Mr. Simkowski had any influence on Ms. Norton with regard to the letter, what went in the letter, or when it was sent. Moving on, Your Honors.
Who did investigate the 2012 charge of discrimination?
Your Honor, that is not in the record. My understanding is that it likely was Sunny Famal, who was the safety director at the time. She no longer works for the company. Again, no discovery was taken of her in this case.
Did she handle union grievances as well as charges of discrimination?
I think with regard to union grievances, like for instance, the 2011 grievance that Ms. Eaton filed, that Mr. Sultan described, that was wholly unrelated to the 2012 EEOC case. She worked more so in tandem with Mark Schneider, who was the company's general superintendent, Your Honor.
So did she handle both?
As far as I know, she had involvement in both, Your Honor, but again, the record does not clarify whether she did handle the investigation in the 2012 EEOC response. There was a different lawyer who represented the company at the time, and that lawyer wrote the response. So it could very well have been that the lawyer also did the investigation herself. With regard to the reasons for why the company did not hire Ms. Eaton, there's undisputed evidence that Mr. Simkowski only told Ms. Norton and Mr. Schneider in the discussion in April 2018 that she was a subpar operator. And importantly, Ms. Eaton concedes that she did in fact have the performance issues that Findorf relies on in deciding to not hire her. She wrote in her own handwritten notes that Mr. Simkowski had counseled her in January 2012 about the speed at which she was running the skip hoist, and there were a lot of complaints from other workers on the job site. She also conceded that she failed at times and sometimes refused to pick up other workers in the skip hoist. In fact, that's one of the hallmarks of the issues that she had on the job site, is that she had this confrontation in the skip hoist with another worker, and then she unilaterally decided that he would no longer be allowed to ride the skip hoist, without ever receiving any indication that she was allowed to make that decision with the company. And she also concedes that at times she did not pick up the trash, which she was required to do. Ms. Eaton, at most, is trying to create an issue of fact about whether the company's decisions was a good one.
Well, but she does note, though, that Mr. Shimkowski, at the same time as he being so critical of her, apparently, is submitting forms for the union that allow her to be promoted from apprentice to journeyman, which is a significant move in the world of unions. And so that could be seen as evidence that the criticisms weren't the real reason for their treatment of her, that in fact her performance was fine and it was something else.
Well, first off, Your Honor, the on-the-job training cards that you're referring to, they are some evidence that the company marked her as an average apprentice. They do not, as Ms. Eaton contends, in any way indicate that she was meeting all of Findor's expectations.
But you know, he knew it was for promotion. I mean, unless you think that Mr. Shimkowski just rubber stamped things and advised unions to promote everybody, I don't know why the logical inference can't be that he was satisfied enough with her work that he was willing to certify for the union that promotion was appropriate.
Your Honor, as with the knowledge or lack thereof of her 2012 EEOC case, I would cite the court to his deposition testimony where he was asked to explain why he rated her as average. And the undisputed testimony why he did that is that because she was standing right in front of him when she completed it, and that he did not want to break her spirit. And furthermore, that she was a Milwaukee County resident and the company had a certain quota of Milwaukee County residents to employ on the job site. So he, as in his own words, he tried to make it work for Milwaukee County residents. And that may not have been the best practice, Your Honor. But here, Ms. Eaton needs evidence not only that it was not a good decision. Sorry, Your Honor, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Eaton needs not only evidence that it was not a good business decision, she needs evidence that the performance issues were not the true reason for terminating her, I'm sorry, for not hiring her, and that the true reason was this other 2012 EEOC complaint. Beyond the on-the-job training cards, Ms. Eaton relies on this letter that was sent in April of 2018. And again, the only testimony in the record about why it was sent 6 years after the end of her employment was that that's when the union asked for it. And so there's certainly no evidence in the record to show that that delay of time was influenced by Mr. Shimkowski, who is the person that she believes is sort of behind this whole thing, or that it's for any other reason, for the nefarious purpose of retaliating against her. I thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Gentry. Anything further, Mr. Sultan?
Yes, just briefly, Your Honor. I'd just like to address docket 16-7, which are a series of letter correspondence related to Ms. Eaton's charge of discrimination. Ms. Eaton filed her charge of discrimination with the EEOC. It was cross-filed with the Wisconsin Equal Rights Division, which is the first letter in Exhibit 16-7, which notes that it's being copied to the respondent, not to the respondent's attorney. The second page is a letter from the respondent's attorney, which is indicating that it's being copied specifically to J.H. Findorf and Son. And then the third, or I should say the last page, which is page 6, is a spreadsheet of actual time cards. And we know from Mr. Simkowski's testimony that the person who is making the time cards, the person who is making the decisions on layoff decisions, is Mr. Simkowski. It's simply inconceivable that Mr. Simkowski or Mr. Schneider were unaware of Ms. Eaton's charge of discrimination. Moreover, Ms. Eaton was not the one who sent her charge of discrimination to J.H. Findorf's attorney. And typically, the EEOC sends it to the respondent first. The second thing I'd like to address that Mr. Gentry pointed out are the lack of adverse actions while she was on the job. It's not just the on-the-job training card to show that her work performance was satisfactory, but Mr. Simkowski also testified that if work performance was poor, he would send a layoff slip. He did not do so when Ms. Eaton was a skip voice operator. He did do so when she operated the telehandler, which is how we ended up with the it's not just the on-the-job training requirements, it's the lack of any layoffs, but and it's also the lack of any adverse action letter like we saw in 2018 by Ms. Wortons. And with that, I will yield the balance of my time.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement and the court will be in recess.